was another one. I was just picking out the themes from what we've already talked about. What was the other one? Security. Does it relate to this? Money?
Well, how about what to do?
Okay.
What to do?
That's a good one.
No, it's not. It's not. It's real stuff. It's real. Look. I've got some here. Look at that. That's not. I mean, it's not just energy in the sense of being a non-substance.
Yeah, it is a substance. You're right. It is a substance.
Right. If you go into a shop and say, "Can I have that? It's 20 quid." Well, here's some money, and you. It's like money's just energy, right? Here you go. Planning for the future. Okay, let's have that as a theme. Planning for the future.
Because for me, it seems more like, how can you be living in the now? It seems really boring to be planning, and yet why not?
It can be boring, but it can also be fun. So you, again, that's something that you can just have a different relationship to, and then what was boring suddenly becomes interesting. It's like, you know, what would it be like to envisage a future consciously and to actually put in the ingredients that we would like to have rather than the ones that randomly seem to fall into place, you know? Then it gets to be fun. It gets to be like, it's like Play-Doh, you know? It's about having a different relationship to it. It's not that it itself is. It's not inherently boring or interesting. It's. Yeah, it can be. It can be either. But and it can be hard work too. Some people, you know, some people thinking about planning is like, oh God, you know, it's something that drains you and so on. But that again is to do with your relationship to it. It doesn't.
I like the idea. It's just not the monotony.
Yeah. So what do we bring to it? So anyway, planning. Forward planning.
I've taken up a pottery class recently.
Pottery.
And I really love it because there's a part of me that has a sort of perfectionist tendency and likes to have things a certain way. And with pottery, I can't do that.
If you try it,
I can try.
Yeah.
But then you put it in the kiln, or you glaze it, and you put it in the kiln, and sometimes I don't recognise my own piece,
yeah.
You know. And sometimes I really hate it and think, oh no, and sometimes I think, my God, that looks fantastic. I never thought it was going to look that good.
Right.
I really watch myself as to I can spend hours deciding what glaze and how to. Sometimes I just grab the first one that is available and shove it in and just let it go, and it's really fun. Much more fun.
It's a good example because it has that combination of your influence and then that which you cannot influence, which is like life, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the elements, fire, you know, water.
Yeah.
Earth. That's almost what I would call the outside in aspect of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that which we cannot influence, there's all kinds of stuff. The problem is when we mistake the two, I think.
Yeah.
You know, we think that one is in one category and it ain't. And that's a problem either way around, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
If we think we're responsible for things that actually we cannot really influence, that's a problem. But equally, if we think that we cannot influence things that we can, that's also a problem.
I see that with parenting, actually. You know, I think there's a whole sort of... I look at my daughter and I often think that she's the mother and I'm the child. She's much wiser than I am. But you know, there's all that kind of stuff that I can bring from my own experience of my mother, my parents, and all the other generations. And there's that moment where you're trying to guide them because you think what is best for them, but ultimately they're their own people. And sometimes I'm very good at standing back and getting out of the way, and sometimes I'm not.
Yeah.
Sometimes I catch myself when I'm not. Sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
Sometimes I forgive myself. Sometimes I beat myself up about it.
That's true. They're as good a mirror for this as anything.
Absolutely.
There's a nice get-out clause from that, going that children choose their parents.
Children choose their parents. Yeah, that's the Khalil Gibran.
I have told them that
approach
several times, and my eldest one is absolutely convinced that cannot be.
You signed up for this, mate.
I'm kidding.
But this is where. Nina and I were just talking about this briefly in the break, where I think there's an overlap between, because a lot of us are familiar with the law of attraction idea.
Mm.
Who is anybody who isn't familiar with that? I think just about everybody. It's in the psyche now, isn't it? That whole idea of like the film The Secret. And this it's been popularised by, especially by, what do they call, Esther Hicks and the Abraham philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Is this completely off the wall to somebody?
I'm not sure.
The whole law of attraction idea is basically suggesting that everything that is in our life, we have brought in, albeit unconsciously most of the time. And the idea, therefore, is if you create more consciously, you will bring in more of the things which you would like to have and less of the things you would not like to have. That's the idea.
Our consciousness creates our reality.
Consciousness creates your reality. Now, the implication in that is that it's a different implication than this understanding that we're exploring here, because it has to do with influencing what's outside of you.
Mm.
Yeah? So it's basically what by changing your thinking, the idea is it will change what shows up in your life in, let's say, in tangible form, like what kind of house you're living in, or what kind of partner you're living with, or how much money is in your bank account, and these kind of things. And most of the law of attraction stuff is focused, it seems to me, on that area. It's basically playing with stuff and letting go of the stuff that you don't want or need, and allowing yourself to bring in the stuff that you would like to have. Okay, that's great. That's not the same as what we call an inside-out understanding. So there is some, I think, often overlapping in our minds between these two things, for those who are familiar with them. And the difference here, when we talk about an inside-out understanding, what we're talking about is being responsible for your own experience of life. Only. That's the beginning and the end of it, your experience of life. In other words, what shows up in your life is what shows up. How you experience it, you're responsible for. You created that 100% of the time. Whether you feel good about it, bad about it, or anything in between, you created that. So that's the inside-out understanding, as I understand it.
That was what I was just going to ask you about, because all the things under there seemed like the money, the what to do, like they're things.
Of course, they're in the realm of the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, and those are the things where, those are the areas, would be examples of areas where we think that inside-out doesn't apply.
Exactly.
Wait, let's see. Come on.
No, there's something on the tip of my brain, but I don't know what it is. But it was to do, like, in the last couple of weeks, it's like, not giving up, but it's like not putting a focus on those things.
Right.
Has happened.
Yes.
And in the last week in particular, a lot of things that could be seen as stressful happened, and it didn't, it just sort of...
You didn't experience them as being stressful.
No. So to me, that's more valuable than...
Definitely.
...trying to...
Well,
do
this to me, you're absolutely right, and this to me is the wonderfully paradoxical element of this,
mm-hmm.
is that when you are recognising that your experience of life is self-created, there's a certain ease that comes with that, and there's a certain equanimity, if you like. There's an acceptance, and there's a peace that comes with it. And from that place...
You can see everything moving almost at a really quickly pace, from one thing to another thing to another thing, and you're just kind of sitting there with it.
Yeah, and you're okay with it, whatever it is that's showing up. But the beauty of it is that from that place, it seems we become much more powerful and effective creators of what we'd like to show up in the outside. So this is the paradox, as I understand it, is that if you do want to play with the stuff of life, it's a downside easier when you're in a place of ease within yourself than if you're fighting against life, or you're reacting against it, or you're struggling against it in some way. Then you're always in some kind of reactive firefight mode. But when you're in that place where actually you're okay with it as it is, from that place you really can create whatever you'd like, and it's relatively easy.
I was just going to say, other people are much happier to help you.
Of course, yeah, yeah. Of course, yeah. Which means that they seem to change too. Which again is paradoxical, because everything.
Just do what you want them to do.
Everything. You're right, but everything you've tried to get them to do that didn't work. And this to me is the, let's say the advantage that inside-out understanding has over law of attraction. And I think that not everybody, I'm kind of using a bit of a, putting everybody in one basket here, and I don't think that's fair, because there are people within the, let's say, the law of attraction community who I think really understand this. They understand how it works. And what they will emphasize is it's all about feeling on the inside first. And if you get to a place where you feel as if you already have everything you need, then your experience of life will be corresponding. Yeah. So they do, you know, some of them do say this, but then people tend to get caught in the idea of it's all about creating stuff, you know, and it's not.
It's about doing.
It's about doing it. And it's also, that reinforces the idea that I need that stuff in order to feel better. That to me is the weakness of that, is that it's easy to get, it reinforces the outside in thinking.
There is another weakness to it, like you know, when I learned about the law of attraction and past lives and blah blah blah, you know, it made me feel really powerless, because, you know, I felt like, I was like, well, then I attracted 100% of what happened to me in my life, like,
yes.
And then I had to choose all the occasions, I don't know if consciously or subconsciously, but it didn't matter. But I was like, how did I attract a pervert when I was 6 years old?
Right.
You know, and I had no idea about,
yeah,
you know, what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
So, it made me really angry to, you know, to that law of attraction kind of thing, that which kind of implies that you had to attract it to your,
yes,
life.
Yes.
Like that you are 100% responsible what happens.
Yeah. And if you didn't do it consciously, then you just did it unconsciously.
Exactly.
But there's a judgment.
Or there is a karma or something like that.
Yeah.
But there's a judgment in that.
What kind of judgment?
Well, the judgment. Well, if somebody turns around and says, well, you attracted that, that's almost like a judgment of your thing.
Right.
And if you take that judgment on board.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, I've got this phrase, every silver lining has a cloud. it's not as negative as it sounds, but it's like when you go and do something and you get some certain result, and you get something you want, you might well get a whole bunch of other stuff that you weren't expecting and you didn't want. But that's just a natural result of whatever you did, and it's a judgment that makes it into a silver lining or a cloud.
Carl Jung had something similar. One of his students gave a big talk for the first time, and it was like a big deal for her. You know, she's like, she'd given a talk and so on, and she went to see him feeling quite good about herself. And he just kind of looked out his eyes and said, yeah, I heard you suffered a big success. And yeah, there's a kind of a wisdom in that somewhere, you know, it's like good and bad, they coexist.
It says, I just had to look it up, I guess. I Ching, you know, in I Ching,
mm-hmm,
there's a section on the superior person.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
It says, he holds his goal lightly in his mind, allowing no opposing thoughts to enter, and as a result, a natural law is drawn inexorably to his goals.
Right. Allowing his own thoughts not to get in the way.
His goal lightly in his mind.
Yeah.
Lightly.
So, not being attached to the outcome is implied in that.
Allows no opposing thoughts to enter.
Right. And no opposing thoughts. So it's not saying you don't have to have any thoughts,
uh-huh,
just no opposing thoughts.
Yeah.
And then,
but that's
and
good
then
doing.
As a result of natural law, is inexorably drawn towards his goal.
So then the universe seems to support you in.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's certainly been my experience. Mm-hmm. If I don't put anything in the way, if I'm clear on what I want or where I'm headed or whatever, and I don't put anything in the way, it's there. I mean, it really is. It's in my face before I know it.
My most, the times when I've achieved, that's what wrong. When I've noticed that happen the most in my life, have been the times I thought, oh, that would be really nice, and I've then completely forgotten about it.
Yeah.
And then it's happened.
Yeah. You just let it go.
Yeah. Completely forgotten about it.
It's happening. It's funny because it's happening in a very funny area right now. I'm putting a patient file back into the file cabinet, and I see somebody's name. Oh, I wonder who they are.
Mm-hmm.
2 days later, this morning, this is happening all the time. I might not see them for a year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm drawing them to me or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really funny because this week, my assistant was looking through cases. She was looking for one that she could type up. So she came into my room, 3 cases, and she said, what about these? And I looked up from my computer and I went, yeah, that's a good one. And I looked back down and the woman had emailed me that second.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't heard from her in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like, freaky.
Was it waves of energy? I don't know. And you kind of tap into that energy and then it just...
I don't know, but it seems to me like these kind of experiences, they give us a glimpse of being in the flow of life.
Yeah.
It's like yesterday I was texting Debbie and I pushed send and my phone started buzzing. I'm like, what's going on? And Debbie's ringing me. And the same thing had already happened with Nina and Naveen the same day, right? She was literally sending the text and Nina was calling her. And to me, it's just like somehow the flow of life, there's nothing impeding it in that moment. You have the thought, I want to contact this person. Either they have the same thought or that thought is a shared thought in that moment and shoom, there's nothing in the way. It's lovely.
So do you mean you sort of relax into it more and just worry about how you are and then the kind of maybe the planning and everything else just kind of comes, which is what I'm beginning to experience rather than doing it the outside?
Well, it can be that way, yeah. It's suddenly, if you realise that actually we've got some kind of a long-term vision here.
That's
and
what I don't understand.
In order for that to unfold, shall we say, there might be certain things we need to put in place now.
Right.
In which case, that will become apparent to you. Yes, no?
Yeah, no, I just kind of, I don't really understand, if maybe it's just more about timing of when it feels right or when you think that now's the time to be.
Right? There are opposing thoughts.
Maybe it's kind of, you know, when you think this is when you want to be doing something, then do it. And if it's not, then not. I think I'm just a little bit confused as to, because it's like, how can you do that if you don't focus on it?
Mm. It's the
and
forcing,
yet,
it's when you force.
Mm. No, I know, like, the forcing, like, that's different. But
I always think about the Tao Te Ching, there's a little bit of it that says, when you get to the point of non-action, everything that was left undone gets done,
yeah.
And it's kind of at the same time you need the planning, but you need it needs to happen.
When
you're in the flow, the plan will sort of come of its own in 5 minutes. Whereas when you're not in the flow, it's going to be an exercise of.
Wow, I'm really attached to it. It has to be hard.
Mm. I think that's the
wow.
thing to notice.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing to notice is the energy that you start feeling in relation to it. And the moment it becomes hard work, or the moment you start getting confused or bogged down,
back off.
Yeah, that's not the place to do it from. And the moment you feel settled and easy about it,
then it happens, yeah.
It's something that's relatively quick and easy to do. You know, you could put a whole five-year plan in place in 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's true.
Really, you could.
Like my husband gets always angry with me when I say something like this. You know, it's like you're not gonna become a piano player and genius in it if you don't exercise every single day. And
yeah.
If you don't spend several hours, and it's a bloody hard work. He says these are his words, not mine. So, but and then you know there are people that contradict that, right? They come to it, start playing, start composing music, and become. But there's definitely many more people that have to go through struggle for a certain period of time.
Sure, it's a popular belief.
Exactly. And that, you know, and it's just, when I get really mad, is that when he says, okay, then show me how we can do it other way.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. This is part of outside-in thinking.
Yeah.
Because outside-in thinking reinforces the there's a popular saying in English, I'll believe it when I see it.
Uh-huh.
And that to me is a prime example of how, you know, collectively we have outside in thinking is very ingrained into us. Show me the evidence, then I'll change my belief, then I'll change my thinking. And of course the inside out model says believe it first, then you'll see it. It's the exact opposite.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know, if you're willing to see it different, you will experience it different, not before then.
That's how the scientific model works, isn't it?
Yeah.
Prove it to me.
Yeah. Yeah. But that is, you know, that's almost, people take that as being almost like it's, what do you call it, axiomatic. You know, people just like, show me the evidence first, and then I'll believe it. People think that that's a sensible way to be, and that all kinds of practical evidence will support that that's, you know, that's realistic, should we say, and anything else isn't. And yet, what's difficult about changing your mind, really? You know, what's to lose? Do you know what I mean? It's like, what does it cost you to change your mind now? Think about that. What does it really cost us to just to be willing to think different?
Since we're children.
Yeah, but I'm not asking what happened to us in the past. I'm asking, what does it cost us right now to change our mind?
That's why it is so difficult. You have to break first to be free, and then you can change. If you are conditioned since you are a child in a certain way, it's my personal experience. And as a child, I always thought that all adults are right, and especially my parents are right. And how could it be? They are so clever and they have different opinion, and my opinion is the correct one. Actually, it was. Now I know that a young child can be a lot wiser than adults because the soul is older and wiser into what I believe, and it helps me a lot. But I felt awful that I felt different, and I didn't allow myself to act on it for years and years and years. So maybe this with some people as well, the conditioning which they don't even realize that it is there, that only through hard work you can achieve a good result, something which is easy for you and like a play. It's not the right thing to do. It cannot be.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. It's like many of us are being conditioned to believe that. I was. That's part of my upbringing in the north of England. You know, it's. However, conditioning has got no independent life of its own.
We support this conditioning by reinforcing it, and so we have to understand that we need to see, to understand, to be brave, to say, I won't do it anymore, or maybe certain circumstances in life when it is disaster, illness or whatever, just and break it.
Yeah, you see, if we get too attached to the idea that I am this way because of conditioning, that's outside in thinking, right there.
Not to get attached, just to see, because at a certain point in life, it is truth. What is happening.
But the moment that you see it for what it is, it isn't.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't take a lot of work to make that switch.
Yeah. You can do it at any time.
You can do it at any time, and I don't care how long you believe that.
Yeah.
You know,
you don't need any efforts. When it is obvious, then it is yes.
Yeah.
But
and that's what I'm asking. What does it cost you to make that switch?
Nothing.
But to come
to this point, for some people it takes a whole life.
Yeah.
And for some it takes less. When you are there.
Well, in this room, which is where we are, and we're not responsible for anyone else except for ourselves in this room, I want to offer the suggestion that we could use this space as a kind of accelerator. Or
losing.
Amplifier, shall we say, for what you say ordinarily takes a long time to come to, it doesn't have to hear.
It doesn't have to hear.
It might for someone else. And you know what? We're not responsible for them, so that's great. Right? But for us here, it doesn't have to. So I'm not going to support you in your excuse that. That we've all had all of this conditioning and therefore it could take us a long... No, I'm not buying that here. If you weren't in this room, I'd say, okay, that could apply to you. But you're here, therefore it doesn't.
Can I work on something with you?
You can bring it into awareness.
I'll bring it into awareness.
I can't promise I'm going to work on it.
No. I've got chocolate in my mouth as well. I've noticed that I was brought up to... you know, to never spend more money than I earned and to be independent and all that sort of stuff. And so there's a part of my psyche which believes that I should be working to generate an income.
Yes.
And recently, so now I'm a homeopath and I do something I love and sometimes I earn money and sometimes I don't. And I don't need to because my husband earns enough money to support us and pay bills and everything, but there's a part of me that could feel guilty if I go and do my pottery class all day, which is really interesting. And I was talking to my mother the other day, who I absolutely love, and she said to me, "So, darling, what do you do all day?" And I thought, So I thought, right, I'm going to tell you. So I did. I went laboriously. I went, when I get up in the morning, and I went through every detail of, you know, And that what I realised was, my mother's always worked incredibly hard her whole life, but right now, she considers herself to be lazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's usually the case with hardworking people.
And I said to her, good for you. I said, you've worked so hard, your whole life, physically hard. She was a landscape gardener. And she worked into her until she was 79, you know. And I said, good for you to be lazy, Mummy. But I just sensed that there was a slight sort of projection of, you know, well, what, because she doesn't, I believe she doesn't think I make an effort to go up and see them enough. And so there's a part of me that actually, when I just focus on my pottery, I really enjoy it, you know, and I'm in a really lovely space. When the kids get back, I've done something for me, which I've really enjoyed. And I don't know, then maybe the energy in the house feels nicer. My husband goes nuts because he can't stand all these pots that I make, and they he hates it. But it's not about him, it's about me doing something I love. But I can sense that potentially there's a part of me that thinks, oh, I don't know if I should be, you know, just slightly feels, could go to guilt.
It's a bit, this is a bit frivolous, really, and I should be doing something.
A little bit.
Yeah. Anyone have a similar...
I get that on occasion, yeah. And I just let it go. The guilt
one about it. Yeah. I actually wrote something about guilt just this week.
Yeah, can you share that?
I will. I will. It'll be the first time it's been publicly shared. There could be a book coming out of this. I don't know yet, but there could be. Because every now and again I just write down a chunk of what it is that's come to light.
It's also like if I don't feel like doing something,
yeah,
I don't do it.
Well, yeah, why should you?
Part of me thinks, ooh, Dee Dee. Ooh. So I think it's a bit of me that's rebelling.
So I was writing about the fact that guilt is optional. That's what I was writing about. Without the thought that I've done something wrong, or I've done something I shouldn't have done, or I've neglected to do something I should have done, you could not feel guilty.
Without the thought
that either I've done something wrong,
yeah,
or I've neglected to do something that I should have done, or I've done something that I shouldn't have. It's, you know, it's one or t'other. Without that thought, you could not feel guilty.
And it's either in the past, because it's something I should have done, which has been in the past, or something that I... No, something that...
It's always in the past. As far as I can tell. So the feeling of guilt does not come from doing something wrong. Mm. That's the thing to notice. It doesn't ever come from doing something wrong.
Because you can have it and have that thought when you haven't done something wrong.
Exactly,
yeah.
Which is often the case.
It comes from your judgment.
It comes from your judgmental thoughts about what you've done.
So it's like,
which is always additional to what you've done. It's not from the action itself. There's no action, or there's no neglect either. There's nothing that you could have omitted to do that will cause you to feel guilty.
Is it like an emotion, reaction on the soul?
Only,
yeah.
Of course.
And it's the same?
But it's a good example, because it's something that I would think many of us can relate to in different areas of life. So, I mean, yeah, sometimes you've probably acted completely innocently,
mm-hmm.
And then either yourself, because you're thinking about it, has kicked in, or because someone else
mm-hmm.
has made a judgment which you believed, then subsequently you start feeling guilty. But actually, when you did what you did, you felt fine about it, isn't it?
Yeah. Depends on what you did.
No, but we've probably all got examples of that. There might be other things where you didn't feel fine quite quickly. The interesting thing I wanted to flag here was that guilt is not the same as conscience.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference?
Conscience is sort of when you act against what you know is what you should be doing.
It's present time feedback.
Yeah.
It's like you take on board that you learned something.
Not necessarily. It can be a first time learning.
Yeah.
It can be a first time learning. But in that moment, there's a feeling that this is not right for me.
Mm-hmm. It's the kind of Buddhist right action.
And the interesting thing is that here's the interesting thing, because people often confuse guilt and conscience.
Yes.
They kind of blur them. Guilt is often the result of ignoring your conscience.
Yes, because you know it, absolutely. Isn't
that interesting? I'd never really realised that until this week.
Guilt is the consequence of ignoring your consciousness.
Yes,
conscience.
Your conscience.
Guilt is the consequence.
Would you go with that? Does that?
Yes.
Yeah.
It kind of, it was one of those things that kind of hit me when I was
Ian,
sitting
oh,
there.
Brilliant.
Do you like that?
It's
not bad.
It hit you, but it took a long time to come to the place.
Oh, shut up. Say again, Alan.
It's like DD's placing a low value on it.
A low value on it. Yes, of course.
Of course, is a judgment.
Yes.
But
yes.
I mean, I did an exercise with kids where I gave them, I said, now think about a £20 note. Now here's a picture of a £20 note. And here's a Bank of Allen £20 note. If you look at a £20 note, it'll say, I promise to pay you £20, sign the bank name. So I made one of those Bank of Allen £20 note. Which one do you want? So, Bank of England £20 note. Okay, why did you pick that one? Why not take the other one? It's just the same. It's just a picture of the Queen and put a signature on it. And why take that one? Why wouldn't you take it in the shop? So the conclusion that you reach is the Bank of England has an agreed value.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones don't have an agreed value. Just like if there was a currency crash, then you know you see currency crashes where you have people taking wheelbarrows of the old currency,
yeah.
And suddenly the agreement that value has just gone.
Right.
Yes.
Well, I remember seeing on the beach in Brazil when I was quite young, and just waking up one morning and finding money. And I had understood that a lot of Brazilians, you know, were very, very poor, and we was kind of told if you go to the beach, don't take things that they might want to steal. So we didn't. And I remember in the morning waking up and just finding cruzeiros absolutely everywhere. And just, it was I was stunned, and then realising that they devalued the currency and it was now worth nothing.
It was tissues. Okay, I'm going to add just something here so we keep it in our awareness a little bit. Money, value. I want to just link those two together in light of what Alan just said. Yes. I think that's a good thread for us to explore.
So we believe that money has value.
We do.
And we have values through money.
And we have what again?
Values through money.
Values through money.
Yeah.
But we've got value.
I mean,
we've got an assigned.
If you have money, you have value.
Yeah.
Ah, okay, yeah, yeah.
But there's an assigned value to everything.
Well.
So money's downstream from that.
Well.
No, but you're trying to say that if you don't make money, you're not valuable.
Yes.
Yes.
In terms of our general, let's say, consensual agreement, the ones who have money, or especially if you've got more money, we think that has more value, or the person is in some way better off.
Can I just say something?
Say
yeah, no, yeah.
I think it was Carol Yu who mentioned the name of a guy called Muji, because you gave me a link onto his speeches. So I was watching one of them the other day, and he mentioned a wonderful thing. I don't understand it, but for me it's very important. And he says that all the money in the world belongs to this earth. So it means even if I have some money in my purse, it's not mine. Yeah. So for me, it totally changed the view of earning money, having money, not having money. Because even if you might be millionaires, you have nothing.
Mm.
Yeah,
it's
not your
it's
money.
Just passing through.
Absolutely. So
yeah.
I'm just using the money, but I know that it will never be mine.
Mm.
So it kind of it gave me a much more a relaxing feeling from constantly being absorbed in thinking about money, planning, you know. Now that you mentioned your planning, your financial planning, I don't know what it is actually, yeah. But simply, I understand that people have these, problems, yeah. So that's what my husband was responsible for, so I never took care of it. But for me, it's like, yeah, so I'm using the money that I have now, but I know that I can never have any of it, yeah, really. So I'm not saying that I understand it, but I'm using this quotation And when there is something to do with money, I say, okay, I can't change anything about it, whether I earn more or less.
But you
can
change
your
whole relationship to it.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Not to the amount of money that I am currently having in my purse. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you an interesting story about that. When I was in Croatia a few months ago, and I was talking with the group, and there was a woman in that group. She didn't mention it on the day that we talked about this, but it was one of the things that came up in a kind of roundabout way, was to do with income and money and so on. And she had some issue which she hadn't mentioned. And the next day when she came in, she had a big smile on her face for no good reason, which I asked her about. And she said, what really strange thing happened? And she went home and she was like, she just found herself in a very kind of peaceful place, which was new to her, you know, at least in her recent experience, it was new. And she was rummaging about in her handbag. She found €1,000, which she would have sworn had been either stolen or lost about 3 months earlier. Did I tell you this before?
Yeah.
And she said, like, she would have sworn blind that it was not in there.
Yeah.
In fact, she'd looked several times just to prove that it wasn't in there, and actually it was, but she was blind to it.
Mm-hmm.
So what we think is, again, what we think is reality around things like money is actually not the reality, it's our experience of reality. A lot of people think they're poor, and they're not. Exactly.
Yeah.
It can cut both ways.
What about the reverse of that? People who think they're rich and they're not. Or people that spend like they have a lot of money, but in reality they don't have a lot at all.
Well, they may have a lot of riches.
Be very creative.
But
I'm just talking about literally spending money that doesn't exist.
Well, we're free to do that these days.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the wonder of the credit system, isn't it? And if you've got plastic now, you can spend money that you don't actually have.
But that's what all the markets do. Well, not all the markets, a general statement, but, you know, think of swaptions.
It's what the banks do.
Bizarre things that people sell things forward that haven't even grown yet.
The banks have only got about 2% of the money that's on their balance sheet. The rest of it's just digits. It doesn't actually exist. It's promised to them.
And that's why we're going through the crisis that we're going through right now.
Yeah, promise to pay the bearer on demand. That's it.
Have you guys seen Inside Job?
No.
It's about the crisis that hit the world.
Yeah, I saw it when it was coming out.
There's an interesting thing, because I'm not into economics and monetary things that much, so I didn't understand a big part of it. But what struck me is that it all collapsed on basically a thought, because, you know, somebody said, I don't trust this company came paying,
exactly,
and it all crumbled into nothing.
What collapsed was the confidence.
Amazing.
Yeah,
exactly. And
that's the only
what
thing.
Is the confidence? It's a thought that you really believe that it's possible.
Yeah.
That
confidence is where you think it's the value.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if enough people agree, then you can continue living as if that's true. And as soon as someone pulls the plug on the thought, the whole thing comes down. It's quite fun, really.
Isn't that kind of example you said, when you confuse whether it's on the inside out or the outside in? You said we get into trouble when we confuse which it is.
Right, yes. Yeah.
That's like
but
the emperor's new clothes.
It is, really. But but having said that, money is like cash, right? Money in some form. It still is even though it's fairly intangible, it's the most tangible, let's say, readily accessible form of exchange that we have in the world. Especially if you want to travel, if you don't want to just stay within your own village and share what you have to offer with someone who gives you food in return. I mean, there are people that live that way, and that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to kind of participate in the wider world, let's say the easiest way to do that is to pay people with some kind of currency and to receive payment in return. Is that fair?
Yeah.
It's just kind of convenient. That's the way I see it. It's not that it's better or ideal, but it's convenient. You can just draw it out, spend it on what you want to spend it on. You don't have to accept a massage that you didn't really want, you know. You can buy the clothes that you did want or something like that. It enables you to be very selective and that kind of thing. So given that we have this stuff that we use as the means of exchange, when we talk about as a currency, it's an outside force, shall we say. It's a thing. It's a tangible.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Yeah.
Like, you've either got some or you haven't. Let's put it in blunt terms, right?
Well, it might be worth X on one day, and on another day, that same thing might be worth a lot less or a lot more.
Well, especially if you travel, you know that's true. Currency exchanges change all the time, but not that much, you know, except on rare occasions when they suddenly plummet. But overall, a pound is a pound today, it's a pound tomorrow, it's getting eroded a little bit by inflation and so on and so on. But there's a certain range of things that you can buy with that, certain other things that you'll need more pounds for. Okay. Now, here's my thing, is let's say, according to inside-out understanding, let's say we're not responsible for how much cash we've got in our banks, right, at the moment. Let's say that's just happened. Let's just play with that.
Do you mean your own bank accounts, or do you mean your bank accounts?
Your own bank accounts, or what?
Personal.
Yeah, yeah, you're on personal. Yeah. So, like, basically, whether you're in debt now or whether you're in credit now, and whether you're in credit to the tune of a million or a tenner, okay, let's just say that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. All right? And it's by happy accident that it's ended up that way. It wasn't necessarily, let's say, your own intention, deliberate,
budget.
Conscious intention. You didn't budget for that, perhaps. Okay. Let's just say it's just ended up that way. Now, how you are in relation to that, that's the inside out bit.
Okay.
Right? With me so far? What?
So I'm just going red and hot money.
Just talking about this hot subject is giving you a flush already. So let's say, for example, I could open my bank statement today, right? And I could go, oh my God. And immediately start thinking about all the bills which I've got to pay and all the things which I've already spent before it's even come in, you know, the things that I've promised and the things that I wanted to do which I clearly can't do now because so that's inside out, isn't it? I'm generating my own experience now. I'm using that feedback from the bank statement and I'm creating a story about it. And as a result of that, I'm putting myself in a certain, let's say, feeling place. Which could be, if there's a spectrum of feeling places, I could be in a place of guilt, anxiety, fear, panic, or I could be in a state of, okay, that's just the deal. Well, it's not such a good month, but I'm surviving. Or I could be in a feeling state that says, actually, that's cool. Everything's going to get paid. There won't be much left over, but that's fine. Or, you know, there's a whole spectrum. Same amount of money, but how I am in response to it could vary. Is that fair?
Yeah.
And it probably does, depending on which, you know, side of the bed you got out of. And I don't know what it depends on, but largely it's about what my thinking is. Whatever thinking I generate in response to seeing that figure will determine my experience. Now, out of that experience that I've self-created, I'm then going to start taking actions or not. I'm going to behave in certain ways or not. I'm going to interact with the outside world or not. In certain ways, which is going to be coloured by how I'm feeling. Yeah?
Yeah.
Because it always is. It can't not be. So I might think, oh, I was going to go down Oxford Street and buy myself a new... Maybe I won't now. So my behaviour's now changed. Now, if you were to ask me, why did you not go? I said, well, because I didn't have the money. That's not true. I didn't go because I changed my thinking about it. Right? My behaviour is changing because of the thoughts and then the just corresponding feelings. That's what's modifying my behaviour. And then I'll justify it based on some fact, like, well, yeah, I haven't got enough to spend on frivolous things. Well, I have actually, it's just a choice I made. You know, I could choose not to pay the rent this month, and couldn't I? I mean, I could, right? Or I could use my plastic and assume that I'm going to have enough to pay it next month or whenever the bill comes in. So the lies that we tell ourselves are not generally true. And this is just using money as an example, but this is a good example of where we go outside in when it suits us. Mm. Right? That's what this is leading to. Because you're paranoid.
But what's the difference between being irresponsible and
just our level of consciousness?
And what?
And just feeling good about something that's not good.
It's your judgment about it.
Well, as I said earlier, conscience is what tells you if it's really not good for you in that moment.
I know that what you're saying is true, but there's a guilt that I carry,
which is not the same as conscience.
Which absolutely has no need to. I mean, there's no need for that guilt to come up.
No, it's optional.
It still does. So how come?
Because there's guilty thinking still happening.
Mm. Yeah, but it has nothing to do with the conscience at that moment.
No, it doesn't. It's always after the event, guilt.
Okay. And you said that the conscience is... Can you repeat that? Conscience
is the feedback, essentially, that the body, or you say the body-mind, gives you, moment by moment, as to whether you're acting in accordance with what's right and true for you. It's got nothing to do with what society agrees is right and wrong. It's a very personal thing.
Yeah, but let's take this example. When I leave my family and go for a weekend like this,
yeah,
I always feel guilty.
Okay, that's
always.
Not conscience.
Yeah, so why is this bloody thinking still there? Because I don't even believe it anymore.
Because there's some self-judgment still there. That's the only reason.
Your kids are probably having a fantastic time. As well as your husband.
They absolutely are, I'm sure.
But there's still some self-judgment about the fact of either going away as a mother is not okay, or, you know, taking that time when you should be with... I don't know what the exact form it takes is. That's the only thing that can give you the guilty feeling.
Yeah.
Is the self-judgment.
Yeah, but I try to reason with it and it doesn't work. So how do I change that? I was like, this is silly. I just can't let that go. And for some reason, it's still sitting there.
But you're making the assumption that it doesn't create value for the kids if you've been here.
I don't know if I'm making that assumption.
Well,
or
that
another
kind of thing. You have to, if you're seeing them with suffering, you have to feel guilty. Somewhere along the line, you have to make the judgment that you being aware.
I don't see them in suffering. You know, I see myself suffering from this guilt.
Well, that's what guilt is. Guilt is a currency in its own right. Guilt is the currency that we use to pay for what we believe we've done wrong.
Well, that's a clever one. Say that again. Guilt is a currency.
Where did that come from? That was good.
Guilt is the currency.
It's the currency we use to pay for what we believe we've done wrong. Should I write that down?
Yeah.
It's not bad, actually.
So the source of that must be the thought that, or the belief that you've done something wrong?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Use it as a threat. Yeah. I mean, I've noticed also that sometimes we even do it in anticipation. I've seen people that would like to do something, but they will prevent themselves from doing it because they know if they did, they would feel guilty. That's kind of advanced guilt, isn't it? It's
more vulnerable.
It's like taking out a loan of guilt, you know, in advance, because you might, you know, you've nothing to be guilty for now, but you might in the future. So you better get some in the bank, just in case you need it.
Like the Czech national budget.
It's like any country's national budget at the moment. But I mean, I would imagine that, Nina, you might do that before you even set off to come here. You might have the momentary pang of guilt in anticipation. Is that possible?
Yeah, as this outside-in model suggests, it's always reconfirmed.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's hard to break that circle. I just...
No, it's not.
Well, that's kind of like forward planning. So it's you know, you've got a highly developed sense of planning. It's just you have to feed the right stuff in.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a little child, just started school, and after probably a couple of months, we got our first marks, teacher put. And I was so happy that I got 2 marks. I ran all the way home, rushed in, and that was my grandfather, and I shouted, "I got marks!" I said, "What did you get?" And I didn't even know. I looked, and it was like equivalent C and D. C and D! I said, "It's very bad." I couldn't understand. I got marks. It's very bad. And then all my school years, I had to get best marks. Otherwise, I would feel guilty. Even if I get B, it was terrible. Mm-hmm. I had to have straight A's.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so happy.
I tell you what I've noticed though. I've worked quite a bit with, when I was doing emotional release work, I mean, guilt is a common currency, so it comes up a lot. What I've noticed is, I mean, first of all, it's just a feeling state.
Yeah.
It's highly overrated.
But when it is inside, it's so painful.
Well, it is when you hold on to it and you keep adding to it. It's quite painful. But actually, if you just let it be as it is, it's no big shakes.
And then I remember, I had, of course, very, very good marks, but then I was already 20, I was finishing university, and I got not A, which I thought I will get, definitely. I got B, and I couldn't come home. I just could not face my parents. And luckily for me, my husband knew where to look for me, and he went and found me and brought home. I just could not face my parents and say, "I got a B."
I would suggest for anyone that gets caught in the feeling of guilt, one of the great antidotes is just really to let yourself feel it, is not to judge yourself for feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
That tends to be what makes it much bigger than it is.
Mm-hmm.
But to just let it be okay. It's just a reminder of a certain kind of thinking which has been habitual, and in that sense, it's good feedback. You know, if you can just take it as feedback. It's like, I'm feeling this way because I'm obviously just judging myself still. And thank you, body. Thank you. You know, thank you. Thank you for reminding me that there's still some judgment that I'm not even aware of. And it must be happening because that's what creates this feeling. And if you can have that kind of relationship to it, rather than, "I'm feeling guilty again. Why?" You know,
yeah.
It's like, "I'm sick of this feeling." And then, of course, you try and push it away, and what happens? You feel it more.
Exactly.
So it's like bringing that kind of more accepting presence to it. Can you just let it be okay that you feel guilty sometimes?
I was once speaking to my son about feeling guilty about the way I've been bringing him up when he was in his early childhood, and he told me, "But I don't need your guilt, I need your love."
Wow.
Yeah.
So people around us, they don't need our guilt, they need our love.
Wow. That's a cracker, isn't it? You can't argue with that.
I've had quite a deep experience around that since we've been on the training, and even the first couple of times, it was just still running through my mind. So even now, my heart is beating just talking about it. But just before we started this training, I sort of reconnected with an old school friend of mine, who I sort of almost could have gone out with just before I met my husband, and so we reconnected and started chatting a lot on the internet, and the first time we started to have proper conversation, I was just after a meditation, and I'd come back and I was in a strange place of real peacefulness, and for some reason I just felt that I was in that place of authenticity, and we were chatting, and I was joking about another school friend. I said we should all go and visit him in Dubai, and he said yes, but if I'd go on a weekend with you, I'd have some thoughts. Thoughts, and I said yes. And I guess in that moment, I said, "Well, don't worry, I've had those thoughts as well." And then started the whole process, which really, really took a lot of my energy over the following months, because we started being talking a lot, and all kinds of feelings kept coming up. And I guess it was the gift, the possibility of all those kinds of thoughts that were coming up, and it was this argument with, at the beginning, I guess I was arguing with reality, and I was, the thing that made me either guilty or angry was, why would I have had the thoughts? Why was I having the thoughts when everything in my life felt? My husband and I were in a really good place, and in fact, the year before had been a year of real change. I was so angry that this was coming up. I was deciding that something out there was doing that to me.
Yeah.
It was like, I don't need to be tested anymore. And I passed it.
Leave me alone.
So it just felt like it came out of nowhere. I didn't ask for that. I was like, I don't want that. And yet it was all there. And it was a real sort of, a lot of things about it. But I was arguing with it. And then until we started this process, I slowly sort of had insights and realization that the misery was coming from, was entirely self-generated. I mean, not only I was just, if I can say, just chatting, but it was all my thought process around it. And in fact, not just my, the first time there was the teleconference, I couldn't be present because I suddenly had this terrible urinary infection. I had to rush to hospital. I was like, oh no, and this, why? And I was like, this is because of the chat. My body is now feeling guilty about it, and I've only chatted to this is insane. And the whole thing took me. Anyway, so little by little, I surrendered both to my urinary infection that wouldn't go away, and surrendered to the source. So it was like, I don't have to add the story, I don't have to judge them. I can just sit there and just accept that. Well, as my pediatric teacher once said to me, well, if you're having a thought about it, just enjoy them. I mean, it's even now, so having sort of inner shake, because there's a bit of judgment. How could I enjoy thinking about someone else that I'm attracted to that's not my husband? And I, you know, kind of surrendered to that process. And something very peaceful came out of that, because the more I've surrendered, the more I've just sort of differentiated between what's wrong and right is a don't exist. It's what we make out of it. And realize that he can't do anything to me. No one, my husband, no one can do anything to me in that process. It's funny because it's the self-generated bit is that there's not even the physical experience of seeing him.
Right.
It's only chatting, which is absolutely...
Yeah, it doesn't take much, does it, to
set
the whole thing in motion?
Yeah, it's just surreal. I haven't seen him for over a year and a half. And just from this chatting on him, it can generate so much things. And I was just like, okay, so we're just going to be with this. And I don't know, I've come to a place of real peace of just being like, okay, this is how I feel. And I still don't know, like, if I was face to face and if I'd meeting, or I don't know, I don't have any answers about it. It's just the acceptance that when the thoughts pop in, I don't have to make anything out of it else than it's just popping. And I don't know, it's just so peaceful. For me, it's been a huge change.
Yeah. It's a great example, Delphine, because it's also pointing to the fact that it's not that we have to stop those thoughts.
Mm.
We don't,
because
it's impossible. They just happen anyway, so that's a waste of time. And we don't even have to try and consciously change them. You know, I'm having negative thoughts, I have to change them to positive. No, no, they're still happening in the way they're happening. All we have to stop is judging them and or taking them seriously.
Yeah. You know? And everything becomes so much wider, because even in the conversation with him, I also realized that at the beginning I had so many expectations in general about everything, about how people should be, how they should respond. It took me through the first 4 months to surrender to all of that. And now with him, when we chat, I don't have an expectation of what he should say, what he shouldn't say, how it should be, what I should respond to. And also the energy with my husband, there's no lying, no energy, because when I chat and then he hears me and he says, what do you do? Yes, I'm chatting to my friend.
Mm.
And it just sort of, because no energy has got attached to it, it seems to.
Yeah.
And I did ask my husband at one point, and I said, I had lots of sort of conversation, and I said, when I stopped feeling guilty, I said, this is the process I've been through and I'd like to share it with you.
Mm.
And I said, well, how do you feel about it? And he said that he felt completely unthreatened, and it was what it was. It was just, it was really strange. There was, And I would say that on this strange level, my husband and I feel really close to each other.
Probably so. I was just thinking that it brings you closer.
Strange, but there is no energy, there's no lie, there's no sense that I could just share that with him and say, look, I just have to tell you because in my authentic self, there's this person that, as a school friend, that I've sort of been attracted to him.
But can you imagine how it might have been if you'd spoken from a place of guilt, or even not spoken, but had been caught in that guilty place?
All the things that can happen, and that, you know, at some point, he could have just realized that I had those chats, and he could have felt really disappointed, and just also I realized for myself that not judging my thoughts allowed me to open up. And also, not to add on to a story and expectation of how he should respond to it, allowed it.
Yeah.
He might have been very angry, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was also okay to, it was kind of not my business.
Exactly. Yeah.
I could only be me. The only way for him and I to, I suppose, to be together is for me to be able to be authentic. Then the right action is my business for me, and his response and his reaction is his business. And from there on, just everything unfolds.
But there is that lovely, it seems to me, that lovely kind of symbiotic relationship between the inner and the outer. When you're okay with it, your partner's okay with it.
Yeah,
you know, it seems to be like that, as far as I can tell. And when you're not, boy, do they show you. Not just your partner, but if you know, your patients will be the same thing. You know, if I've worked with a lot of practitioners and they feel guilty about charging a fee. So, of course, they attract all the clients who question them about the fee. You know, it's like, you're charging how much? And it's 20 quid or something, you know. Someone else is charging 100. No one ever asks, you know, because the practitioner's okay with that. It's like that energy exchange is happening.
And it differentiates between the guilt and the conscience as well.
Yes.
Because suddenly the guilt is also about, it's also about expectation and other people and what.
Right.
It's a kind of, I realize that when I just also just made it, okay, let's not judge myself, I don't see what my husband should be reacting. That's what's happening. The source is there. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's just what's happening.
Yeah, and then the right action, I guess, becomes self-driven. As the judgment and the guilt come together, the guilt would make that, you know, I don't know, it's like, when it's just about me and not about neither my friend nor my husband nor anybody else, then my right action in that moment of peace is what feels okay for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's enough to take care of.
Yeah, and it comes from, it's really,
it's enough.
So that's been, for me, a massive thing that came out of that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It could have gone very wrong, I think.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's
in
good.
Terms
to,
of my misery.
It's good to notice where, these other paths it could have taken, and to see that actually that wasn't what happened, and that's great. Judgment, self-judgment. This is a whole category of thinking, which creates so much of our suffering.
Yeah.
It's a whole category of thinking. It's not, you know, when we talk about judgment, it's not limited to just one area of life or. You know, there's like self-judgment, judgment of others, judgment of life, judgment, moral judgment. There's so many forms that it takes. And as far as I can tell, it always contaminates our experience in some way. It's just a question of how much.
And it is also very energy-consuming, very draining.
Yeah.
And I notice that people who are judgmental, they look like they are worn out and they are always on guard not to miss opportunity to make a judgment.
Yeah. Well, it's exhausting, isn't it, to be the captain of the whole world? You know?
Yeah.
It's like for me to know how everything should be and how everyone else should be behaving, that's tiring.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot that I have to take care of.
It's really emotional poison.
I recently allowed myself not to go to an appointment for my son and to get counseling. And he offered, and he's offered before, and I feel like I should do it, you know, all of it, I'm not just should, but like, you know, that I should be able to do all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And actually this time I I didn't go and I had a really relaxing morning and he went. And it was so different.
Yeah.
You know, it was just so much better for all of us. Yeah. And then I was choosing frames, and I was like, oh, I really wanted to be there.
Right. I missed out on this experience.
And he thought it was hilarious that he knew that I would really want to be there. And like, so, well, that part of it was quite helpful. Yeah. Yeah, it was just much nicer rather than then I was turning it into this big, I would then judge him for not participating in these things.
Hmm.
You know,
well, if you start to see how much of our everyday behavior is driven by a desire not to feel guilty.
Or a desire to not feel something. It might not
yeah.
necessarily be guilt.
No, exactly. But
else.
It commonly is guilt. Yeah, fear and guilt are the two commonest drivers that people use.
Mm-hmm.
And if you took away both of those,
yeah.
right, if you basically let go of the thinking process that's generating both guilt and fear, what's left? What's left is a real freedom.
Mm-hmm.
It's a freedom to really enjoy life in a way that's not available to you when it's been driven by something emotionally charged the whole time. Life becomes much more playful.
Because I was quite fearful about what would be said because we'd had so many appointments, so there was like some news or some this or some that.
Yeah. So it's that, and you know, the mind starts to anticipate this and this will happen and then I will feel. So in order to prevent that, I better do all these things that actually I don't want to do. You know? And then we're caught in a cycle of self-generated difficult life. And then it looks to us like life is difficult. You know, life is making demands on us. And life is requiring us to do these things which we'd rather not be doing. That's how it starts to look. And it feels totally real when you're in that mode. It's like, well, you don't know what it's like. You know, it's all right for you. You see someone else swanning about making pots or whatever it is they're doing just for the fun of it. You think, well, you don't know what it's like in the real world, either. You know, some of us have got to work for a living, you know. And this kind of thing. It seems really convincing when you're in it.
And you're in a different state. Like, you're so much more enjoyable.
Yeah. What's that touching?
a lot this morning.
Okay.
I've been having actually it's quite funny, what made me laugh was the money and value placed on it, because I completely lost the plot. Christmas was great. It was a whole different thing, what have you, and then somewhere around the start of the year, I just lost the plot completely and went into I've lost my job, the money's going to run out in a couple of months, I've got no way of getting any income, well I have, but it's not going to work. And, and the stupidity of it is, if I just don't listen to the thoughts and actually just focus and feel, I know that